Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. Before briefly introducing what I intend to talk about this week, I want to take this opportunity to wish season's greetings to my listeners. To the Jewish listeners, I want to send best wishes for Happy Hanukkah. This is an eight-day holiday that has no real religious restrictions. There are a few prayers that are added to the usual prayers, and there's the candle lighting every evening that is really lots of fun and is generally treated as a family occasion, and there are family meals and trips and exchanging of presents. There are no restrictions like prohibition to do work or travel. And here in Israel, the schools are closed for all or part of the week, so it's a good time all around. And to my Christian listeners, I want to send my best wishes for the Yuletide season and the new year. This is the season to be jolly and exchange good wishes and presents, and I add my good wishes. As far as today's program, I'll talk about some of the fallout from the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel by the American president. It's a long overdue item. Jerusalem has been Israel's capital formally since shortly after the establishment of the state back in 1948, but it's been the capital of the Jewish people for almost 3,000 years when it was established by King David. Our people was in exile for almost 2,000 years, but we never gave up the hope to return, and we have returned. That's something to be celebrated. It's a pity it took this long for an American administration to recognize this fact, but better late than never. Some of our erstwhile friends, particularly European countries, are not happy with President Trump's decision. I'll say a few words about that. But the bottom line is that many of those who cannot accept that Israel is the capital of the state of Israel tend to be exactly the same ones who cannot accept the state of Israel at all. That is a sad fact, but unfortunately, it is a fact. I'll talk about these and a few other things. So thanks for listening, and I'll be right back.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. The biggest news this week, and the biggest news actually in the last 70 years, and to a certain extent, probably the biggest news in the last 2,000 years, is the fact that a major power, the United States, has recognized the city of Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Israel, the Jewish state. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Let's start with talking about the reaction of the Palestinian Arabs. As soon as the president made his declaration, that was on December 6th, the Palestinians declared a three-day-long rage because of what the American president had announced, recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Thus far, however, and I'm recording this on the beginning of the week after, thus far it seems the real anger is showing up not in the Palestinian street, but rather in the international media. There is a massive presence of the international media in Jerusalem. Since Trump's announcement on December 6, dozens of additional journalists and camera crews have been brought here to Israel to cover what's considered one of the big stories in the world today. There is a hotel in Jerusalem, the American Colony Hotel. It's a stately old hotel that was used quite a bit during the British Mandate. And it was once a favorite haunt of international reporters. And once again, it's packed with journalists from around the world. Some of these journalists, including those working for American networks, have been flown in from working posts around the world to cover what many of them are already calling the new Palestinian Intifada. But the question we have to ask ourselves is it really a new Intifada, or is it simply wishful thinking on the part of these foreign reporters who are looking for a story? Since December 6th, we have seen wild exaggeration in the media as to what is really happening in and around the old city of Jerusalem. What is evident, however, is that the number of journalists and photographers covering the protests in the city have thus far exceeded the number of Palestinian protesters. On Friday, December 8th, which was the final day of the announced Palestinian rage, the Palestinian Authority, Hamas, and other Palestinian groups announced that there were going to be mass rallies and protests after Friday prayers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This, by the way, is one of the favorite times that the Palestinians protest and make trouble, because they come into the city of Jerusalem to up to the Al-Aqsa Mosque for Friday prayers, and they get worked up by those giving the sermons. So this is what the reporters expected. By early morning, on Friday morning, at least six television production trucks were stationed in a small parking lot outside the Damascus Gate, which is the main entrance to the old city of Jerusalem, primarily into the Arab section, what they call the Muslim Quarter. And there were trucks there belonging to various television stations. They were presumably brought there to film live broadcasts of all these anticipated mass protests, which were expected, of course, to be violent. The Palestinians never have a non-violent protest. It's not in their workbook. There were 70 or 80 journalists and photographers awaiting for the Muslim worshippers to finish their prayers on Friday morning and start their protests. What in the end happened was there was a small and peaceful protest. It was rather unusual. Less than 50 Palestinians who chanted slogans against Israel, against the United States, and against Arab leaders, including Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who's considered a traitor and an Israeli spy. A German journalist tweeted from the scene, "More journalists than protesters after Friday prayers." So far, the doomsday prophecies have not materialized. The next day, Saturday, December 9th, we witnessed a repetition of the same scenario in Jerusalem. The city was relatively quiet, but the presence of journalists and photographers was very large. At noon, a small group of Palestinians, less than 30, staged a protest on the main business thoroughfare of East Jerusalem, which is outside the city wall. It's called Salah ad-Din Street. And they chanted slogans against Israel and the United States. And there were actually more people with cameras there than anyone clashing with the police. There are as many media and onlookers taking photos there as there are youth and police waiting for the clashes. That was the reality. There are nearly 300,000 Arabs living in Jerusalem, and the truth is that the vast majority did not take part in any of the small protests, which was staged deliberately as a show for the dozens of journalists who converged on the city. In fact, this is interesting, according to the news reports, there were more protesters protesting against Trump on the streets of Berlin, Cairo, and Valencia, Spain, and Istanbul than in Jerusalem itself, with the exception of two incidents at the Damascus Gate and the Salah ad-Din Street, as I said, the main street outside the wall in East Jerusalem. The remaining Arab neighborhoods, of which there are about 28, the remaining Arab neighborhoods of Jerusalem were mostly quiet, with nothing dramatic happening, nothing at all. The bored journalists were forced to put on their helmets and their bulletproof vests, which is what they wear, and they head to other places in what they call the West Bank in the hope of capturing scenes of some kind of new intifada. That's what they're looking for. What they found, however, was not unusual. There were minor clashes between stone throwers and Israeli soldiers, which occur just about every day of the week. Protests against Israel and the United States are not uncommon on the streets of Ramallah, Hebron, and Bethlehem. But there's nothing more exciting than standing behind burning tires and stone throwers and reporting from the heart of the clashes, from the battlefield, because these scenes make the journalists look as if they're in the middle of a battlefield, and they're risking their lives to bring the story home to their viewers, which is good for their reputation. I knew an Israeli journalist many years ago who was very upset because he was never the victim of stone throwing or rioting, because it makes a name for the reporter and it could help him get a better position or get more money or some kind of reward for being in a battlefield. The large number of journalists dispatched to Israel expected, and perhaps even hoped, that Trump's announcement would trigger a new Palestinian intifada. This way, the media could blame Trump for igniting violence, instigating instability, and messing up the peace process. So I think what it really has to do, what it's all about, is media-based Trump hatred. Of course, it's also about media-based hatred of Israel, and are searching for any and all excuses to blame the Jews for the suffering of the Palestinians. The journalists, however, will not let those facts get in the way. What's really happening? They continue to report as if Jerusalem is engulfed in flames. The reality on the ground is far from that. I know. I live in Jerusalem. There is no peace process that's about to be derailed, for the very simple reason there was not a peace process in the first place. There hasn't been one for years, mostly thanks to Palestinian rejectionism, indoctrination, and incitement. There is simply no peace process. The protests and violence we're witnessing in parts of Jerusalem and the West Bank constitute daily life here. It's not as if the Palestinians have not been carrying out terror attacks against Israelis all these years on a daily basis. It's not as if the Palestinians used to love Israel or even recognize its right to exist until Trump made his announcement last week that the American embassy is going to be moved to Jerusalem. There was no peace before that. There's nothing new on the Palestinian street. Palestinian threats of violence and walking out of any peace process is old. As a matter of fact, the head of the Palestinian Authority hasn't sat down with the Israelis for quite a few years already. Jerusalem is not on fire. Jerusalem is not tense and has long not been tense because the Palestinians have not yet managed to come to terms with Israel's right to exist, but they're not happy about it. That's the real story. The Palestinians rage for only one reason, because Israel exists. That is the bottom line of the story. Now, I want to say more about this after the break, because I want to talk somewhat more about the background of the situation, and I want to say a few words about some people trying to find a solution to the problem out of the box, which I'll discuss. The problem with their solution is it is based on false premises. And I'm sort of giving the listeners a heads up before I discuss it, because some very intelligent people coming up with some ideas that unfortunately don't make any sense. For example, the two-state solution. There never was, there is not now, nor there ever will be a two-state solution, because the Arabs don't want it, no matter how much Israel wants it. I'll discuss this in detail when I come back. Jay Shapiro, I'll be right back after the break.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. During the first segment of the program, I was talking about the Palestinian response to the fact that the American government now recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Now, I can say a few words as the background, because the conventional wisdom is deeply flawed. Back in 1947, the United States made a partition resolution in which they designated Jerusalem as an international city. In other words, they would divide Palestine into a Jewish state, into an Arab state, and an international city of Jerusalem. Now, nobody was too happy about that, and the Arabs initiated a war, and the Jews captured a good part of the land, although the Jordanian Legion captured the old city, and they held it for 19 years until the 1967 war, when the Israeli army kicked the Jordanians out of all of Palestine. But back in 1948-1949, Israel occupied only the western half of the city, and Israel established its capital there within a year. While Jordan's Arab Legion took, which was a very well-trained army led by British officers, Jordan illegally captured the eastern half of the city of Jerusalem. Israeli forces captured and annexed East Jerusalem in the 1967 war called the Six-Day War. Now they have a lot of proposals to move the embassy. This proposal to move the embassy have involved relocation to West Jerusalem, territory to which, by the way, the Palestinian negotiators have not laid claim. According to the negotiations, which aren't really happening much anymore, but there were negotiations about a two-state solution, and the city of Jerusalem was supposed to be divided again, and part of it would remain the Israeli capital, and the other part would become the capital of Palestine. But these negotiations are dead in their tracks. So the anger expressed by Palestinian Arab leaders toward the proposed relocation of the American embassy is not rooted in concerns that Palestinian claims to the disputed territory will be compromised, because if the Americans move the embassy, they will only move it to that part of the city which would belong to the state of Israel. In other words, if it's going to be a two-state solution, then you're going to divide the city of Jerusalem, and the American embassy can be in the Jewish half, the Israeli half. According to a recent poll, just 12% of Palestinians in the West Bank and 25% of Palestinians in Gaza considered the location of a U.S. embassy an important issue. They don't even think about it. There's a magazine called the Middle East Quarterly, and a fellow by the name of Marshall Breger, a professor at Catholic University of America, back in 1994, he wrote an article, and he wrote that Muslim religious and cultural attachments to Jerusalem are not very deep. Contrary to mainstream media depictions of the city as the third holiest in Islam, Jerusalem is not mentioned by name in the Quran, was never visited by the Prophet Muhammad officially, and was never the capital of any Arab-Islamic polity. In another recent article in the Middle East Quarterly, was a great magazine, where it records different attitudes and different Muslim views of Jerusalem's sacredness over the centuries. And it turns out, this is very interesting, the Arabs, the Muslims, consider the city more sacred if it's in the hands of somebody else. There are very few accounts of the Prophet Muhammad's words and actions referencing Jerusalem prior to the Crusades. But when the Muslim rulers needed a means of inspiring their subjects to wage jihad against the Europeans, then they started attaching more sacred appearance to the city of Jerusalem. However, once safely in Muslim hands, interest in Jerusalem dissipated. It happened so rapidly that Saladin's grandson traded the city back to the Europeans just 40 years after the Crusades in exchange for military aid against another rival. Interest again rose among the Muslims in the 13th century, then it declined for 6.5 centuries. It rose again during the British Mandate in the last century, when Haji Amin al-Husseini, the infamous Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, needed a mechanism for inciting his followers to violence. Interest then declined again. As a matter of fact, the most famous mosque there, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, fell into disrepair. No Arab leader even bothered to visit East Jerusalem from 1948 until 1967, when the Jordanians ruled the old city. But when it fell into Israeli hands, it set in motion a new wave of Jerusalem mania, and it's cultivated by these rejectionist Palestinian leaders and others. One of the most notable today, by the way, is the president of Turkey. So the Muslim interest lies not so much in controlling Jerusalem as it does in denying control of the city to anybody else. That's the way it works. Islam carries the expectation that a land once under Muslim control, which is known as Dar al-Islam, is an endowment that must inevitably revert to Muslim rule again. Everything else is called Dar el-Kharb, the part, the world of the war. In this respect, the distinction between Western and Eastern Jerusalem, and more generally between the territories held by Israel in 1949 and the new ones captured in 1967, it's immaterial. It's all the same depending on who controls it. When the Muslims see that somebody else control it, they suddenly get very upset about it. But when they control it, they practically neglect it. That's why even moderate Palestinian leaders, so-called moderate, balk at officially recognize the right to exist of a Jewish state wherever it borders, because they consider this part of the world to belong to them. It's Dar al-Islam. At most, they're prepared to accept that a state by the name of Israel exists temporarily, and maybe they would even extend diplomatic recognition to it, only provided that the right of return to Israel for millions of Palestinians is respected by Israel, which, of course, Israel cannot allow. Now, what about American policy? Since 1948, the United States and other governments did not recognize any part of Jerusalem as part of Israel, let alone its capital. But they all have their embassies 40 miles away in the Tel Aviv area. The initially reflecting hopes of resurrecting the 1947 internationalization proposal, it's now entirely driven by fear that recognizing Israel's sovereignty anywhere in Jerusalem will alienate Palestinians in a broader Arab-Islamic world, damaging prospects for peace. In other words, what is the fear? The fear is that if you recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, you'll kill the peace process, which we realize doesn't exist to begin with. But the refusal of successive American presidents to fully recognize Israel, even though a lot of them promised it during their election campaigns, they don't even recognize Israel's sovereignty in those parts of Jerusalem within the 1947 armistice lines. So the fact that they don't recognize it really has undermined the peace process. Why? Because it encourages unrealistic hopes among the Palestinians that rejectionism will pay off. In other words, they keep refusing to recognize any kind of Israeli sovereignty, then they'll get paid off. The main impediment to Palestinian compromise is not Palestinian suspicion, it's the fundamental unwillingness of Palestinian leaders across the spectrum to accept the existence of a Jewish state alongside their own, no matter how big the Jewish state is, and no matter how big its boundaries are. So the peace process, if there is such a thing, assuming there is for a moment, it's had an impasse. So now, what have the Palestinian leaders done? The Palestinian leaders have launched something new. It's the BDS movement. It's boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And last year, with the support of the United States government, the UN Security Council passed a resolution, number 2334, under the Obama administration that effectively declared that Israel's claims in disputed East Jerusalem are null and void. Instead of pursuing a peaceful path to statehood, what this has done is incited violence against Israel while trying to persuade the rest of the world to recognize Palestinian statehood in the absence of peace. Now, a lot of this has to do with the fact there's growing European left-wing political parties' dependence on Muslim immigrants' votes. That is a major problem. Many people in the West simply do not want the Jews to have full control over their eternal city. I'll say a little bit more about this after the break.
If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs as they affect Israel, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Thursday at 5 p.m. Israel time. And it's all archived on the station's website. I am Walter Bingham. Make it a date.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few more words about the Trump decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And I want to discuss some actions that occurred in the Knesset, the Israel's parliament, and the American Congress that didn't seem to get a lot of attention. Now, it's no doubt that the Trump's move starts off as being symbolic. I don't know how long it will take for it to actually be implemented. The embassy will remain in Tel Aviv for probably quite a long time. but it does send a message that makes achieving a solution to the conflict more likely, really more likely, but, although it sounds odd to say that, especially since the Palestinians carried on so much. So consider the following. This month, there was a commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the plan passed by the United Nations to partition what was then a British Mandate territory into two states, a Jewish state and an Arab state. Of course, the Israelis accepted the plan. The Palestinians, who, by the way, were not a people at that time, they only became a people in 1964 when they wrote the Palestinian Charter. There were no Palestinian peoples till 1964. They were just Arabs living in Palestine. So the Arabs rejected the plan. They launched a war. The war was won by Israel. But the Arabs never accepted it. For the Palestinians, the war is still being fought, and their rejection of Israel continues. And years of concessions, of work to build the Palestinian Authority since 1994, and not billions of dollars poured into the Palestinian Authority, has proven that they're not capable of running a viable country, a viable nation. They're not even trying to. And we're no closer to peace than we were before. During the Oslo Accords, the Palestinians recognized Israel in all languages except Arabic. And that's the one that counts. And they still haven't internally recognized Israel's right to exist as a national homeland for the Jewish people. This is critical to understanding the reality, and to give an idea of this reality, this year the Palestinians attempted to force the British government to apologize for the Balfour Declaration, which was made back in 1917, promising the Jewish people a homeland in Palestine, which of course would become Israel. Now, some clever people have set out, I'm not talking about Palestinians, I'm talking about people in the United States and in Israel. These clever people have set out to reframe the conflict. And this month, for example, a group of legislators from Israel called the Knesset Israel Victory Caucus, has a name, came to Washington. They met with influential leaders in the American Jewish community. They met with some of the leading thinkers on these issues in the press and academia. Perhaps most significantly, they met with policymakers in the Trump administration and a group in Congress called the Congressional Israel Victory Caucus. So you have the Knesset Israel Victory Caucus and you have the Congressional Israel Victory Caucus. Now, these groups pledged to work together toward reframing the definition through which we all view the conflict. They signed a statement that said, in part, the primary obstacle to ending the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is this Palestinian rejectionism of the right of self-determination for the Jewish people. And this is what they see as the crux of the problem. How can Israel make peace when the Palestinians simply don't want peace? It may sound strange, but think about it for a moment. Individual Palestinians surely want the conflict to be over. They want to make a living and raise their families. But as a nation, they still seem convinced that they have the choice between accepting Israel and coexisting or rejecting Israel and destroying Israel. So you have these two new groups, one in Israel and the United States, who are going to advocate for policy within their own governments aimed at reaching a shared goal, which is to redefine the conflict. Now, I'm not quite sure what this means, because you cannot redefine the conflict for somebody else. For example, the educational system in the Palestinian Authority does not recognize the right of the State of Israel to exist, nor perhaps even individual Jews to live. And the same thing is true in the media, in the Palestinian media. So one of the ideas considered by these two groups is to undertake serious campaigns in the media to change the minds of the Palestinian people. They want to make campaigns that work to drain the Palestinians' will to reject Israel. And they think that this will pay dividends in the long run, because they say there is a certain percentage of Palestinians who accept Israel as a Jewish state, and they should be empowered to push their leadership in that direction. But you see, that makes no sense whatsoever, because how are you going to undertake to change a serious campaign to change the minds of the Palestinians and their media when they control their media? How are we going to get into their media in order to change their minds? The same thing is true as their educational system. How are you going to control their educational system, which they control? So you there is no way to get into their minds through their own means. And certainly you can't do it from the outside. The problem is that this is an ethno-religious problem. And since it's an ethno-religious problem, then the Palestinians educate and preach toward the destruction of the state of Israel. So I can't imagine what this Knesset group, together with this U.S. Congress group, can do about it at all. They don't have the tools to do anything about it. And I'm really surprised, but I've read what's being said about these two new groups, but I haven't really read the details. They must have something up their sleeve that I can't imagine. I certainly can't tell from the news reports. And finally, the last thing I want to say this week about the president's announcement, it was indeed both historic and commendable. It was historic because it's the first time that an American president has not just acknowledged the reality that the Israeli capital is Jerusalem, because that's where the state of Israel wants it to be, but the president decided to act on that acknowledgement. It is commendable for breaking this trend, a very deceitful trend, that denies reality, and Trump accepted what will remain the reality on the ground. Yet the Palestinian leadership, much of the mainstream media, academia, and the global diplomatic community believe that the American president should have never said that the United States recognized Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Israel, and the United States Embassy will be relocated to Jerusalem as soon as practicable. Those were his words. Now, even so-called friends of Israel have pretty much showed their colors. Give you a couple of quick examples, because the reaction around the world in recent days has been pretty much of a reminder of one of the central truths of the whole conflict. It really is important, and that is the following. Those who cannot accept that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel tend to be exactly the same ones as those who cannot accept the state of Israel altogether. Now, just an example, take what the Prime Minister of Great Britain said, Theresa May, and I quote, "We disagree with the U.S. decision to move its embassy to Jerusalem and recognize Jerusalem as Israeli capital before a final status agreement. We believe it is unhelpful in terms of prospects for peace in the region. The British embassy to Israel is based in Tel Aviv, and we have no plans to move it. Our position on the status of Jerusalem is clear and longstanding. It should be determined in a negotiated settlement between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and the Jerusalem should ultimately be shared capital of the Israeli and Palestinian states. In line with relevant Security Council resolutions, we regard East Jerusalem as part of the occupied Palestinian territories." Unquote. That is the British Prime Minister. And you wonder why she doesn't want to share London with Belfast or with Dublin. So here you have a country which is supposed to be an ally of Israel, where the head of that country comes out with that statement, which essentially denies reality And the only one who came up within the last 70 years to really face reality, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, when and if the American embassy is going to move. But the very fact that the American president faced reality and stood up to reality, it's a fantastic thing. And it throws into shadow the other so-called friends of Israel who do not wish to recognize the reality that the state of Israel has a capital in Jerusalem, which is where the government of Israel wants it to be and where the people of Israel want it to be. And that is the bottom line. So the American president has brought a lot of things into focus simply by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital. Anyhow, these are pretty much exciting times. And we'll talk more about this last week and that next week. Until next week, then, this is Jay Shapiro. Take care of yourselves.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.